Think you're well diversified because you own three different ETFs? You might be surprised to learn that you're essentially tripling down on some of the same handful of tech companies. In this week's episode, we're breaking down some of the hidden overlap in some of the most popular ETFs and show you how to build true diversification into your portfolio. So for the sake of time, let's dive right into it. Welcome back to the Wealth Decisions Podcast for your current listeners, and welcome all you new listeners out to today. Today we're going to talk about a common misconception that I see all the time when I review prospective clients' portfolios. And that's the illusion of diversification. So let's just start with a quick overview of the three most popular ETFs. The first one is SPY, and that is covering the S&P 500. The QQQ, which follows the NASDAQ 100, and this focuses on the largest non-financial companies listed on the NASDAQ. And the VUG, which is the Vanguard Growth ETF, and this targets U.S. large cap growth stocks. But here's where it gets interesting. All three of these ETFs have Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta as some of their top holdings. The QQQ, those five tech stocks represent 35% of that ETF. In the SPY, the S&P 500, those five tech stocks represent 26%. And in the VUG, they represent 46% of that particular ETF. That means if you split your money equally between those three funds, you're not getting three different investments. You're actually tripling your exposure to the same companies. So if you owned all three of these ETFs equally, over 40% of your portfolio would be in the same 10 technology companies. Now, hindsight is 20/20. Obviously, if you could go back in time and buy those top tech companies 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you would have been well rewarded. But this concentration creates several risks. You could have tech sector problems. There's been many times in history where tech stocks went down drastically and underperformed for a period of time. And any regulatory changes or sector-specific downturns could hit your portfolio particularly hard. Right now, tech stocks is where a lot of the money is going. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of 1999 and 2000, when everybody wanted to own tech stocks and everybody was overweighted in tech stocks. And if you remember 2000, March of 2000, what happened? That was the tech boom in 1999 and the tech bust in 2000. And many of those tech stocks went down 60, 70, 80%. Another part of the concentration risk is that it's very dependent on the U.S. You're missing out on a lot of growth opportunities in other parts of the world, like developed markets or emerging markets. And third, there's a large cap bias. You're not capturing the potential of smaller and emerging companies or mid-sized companies that are growing much faster and that have great products and great growth ahead of them. True diversification really requires a thoughtful approach across, I think, four key dimensions. Having some geographic diversification would be number one. You know, have a balance between the U.S. and international markets. That exact allocation all depends on your risk tolerance, your time horizon, and your goals. But a lot of financial advisors suggest having anywhere from 20 to 35% in international and emerging markets. Number two is market cap diversification. Have a mix of large, mid, and small cap companies. Your base of equity investments might be mostly large, but having some exposure to mid caps and small caps can really help your returns over time and give you some diversification into other parts of the market. Number three would be style diversification, having a balance between growth and value approaches. This is going to minimize your volatility, and there's a lot of opportunities in the value category. When growth gets overheated, there tends to be rotation into value. So you want to have some value investments in your portfolio. And value investments are typically stocks that are undervalued or pay dividends. They're high quality companies, typically at a discount. Number four would be asset class diversification. If you're approaching retirement, you're 3 to 5 years away from retirement, you need to have a strategic mix of stocks, bonds, and alternative investments. And the right mix for you is all dependent on your goals and how close you are to retirement. If you're 30 years old, you may not have any bonds in your portfolio, but you may consider alternative investments like commodities or real estate investment trusts. Having the appropriate allocation is all based upon, you know, your personal goals and your risk tolerance. Now I want to go back to this idea of investing in what a lot of people think is the market. The S&P 500, which I talked about earlier in this episode, is a makeup of 500 companies in the United States alone. Now, this argument I've dealt with my whole career. Why wouldn't you just put all of your money in the S&P? Since most mutual funds tend to not outperform that index. Now, I want to share with you just some of the hidden risks of having all of your money in the S&P 500. It's hard to argue with the performance, but the S&P 500 is not the market. Some of the hidden risks include geographic concentration. So, despite some of the companies being global companies, all of them are based in the U.S. And during periods of U.S. economic weakness or maybe a decline in the dollar, this can hurt your returns. For example, during the lost decade from 2000 to 2009, the S&P actually lost money while international markets gained. The S&P also has a large cap bias. The S&P really is heavily weighted towards large companies. And history shows that small cap stocks often outperform during economic recoveries and periods of high growth. So by focusing just on large caps, you're missing some of those opportunities. There's also a big sector overweight towards technology stocks. Almost 35% of the S&P is in tech stocks. So if we ever have a downturn in the technology industry, and it's happened many, many times before, there's some big risks of having all of your money in the S&P 500 alone. It's not necessarily about trying to outperform the market. When you're in the S&P 500, you're going to perform what the S&P does. And in downturns, it's whether or not you can stick to your plan. Investing is easy when the markets are going up and it feels good. But when markets become more challenging or we have a downturn, that's where it becomes a little bit more difficult to stick to your investment strategy. If your investment strategy is to put all of your money into the S&P 500, your portfolio is going to go up and down based upon that index. But let's just go back in time and look at some of the past downturns in the market and how a diversified portfolio would do versus having 100% in the S&P. And let's just say that you're 3 to 5 years away from retirement and your risk tolerance says that you should have a 70-30 mix with your investment portfolio. So instead of having 100% in the S&P 500, you keep 30% in the S&P, you put 15% in a large cap value ETF, you put 10% in international, 5% in small caps, 5% in REITs or real estate investment trusts, and 5% in emerging markets. And then for the core fixed income component, we put 30% in just a core ETF in the fixed income area. And when you look at different periods of time, You look at, for instance, the financial crisis. This balanced portfolio would have been down about 34% in the financial crisis, when the S&P was down about 53%. So about a 20% difference with this balanced approach. During the pandemic crash, the balanced portfolio was down about 22% versus the S&P, which was down 34%. So about a 12% difference between those two portfolios. You'd be taking on about 35% less risk than the S&P, and your dividend yield would be about 2.9% versus the dividend yield currently of the S&P, which is 1.17%. So about 60% more income. So having a diversified mix means that you're not going to always be the best performing asset class. It's not about comparing a diversified portfolio to the S&P 500. That's not the right benchmark to compare your performance to. It's about taking on the right amount of risk, try to get you the best rate of return while managing that risk. And if you're close to retirement, 3 to 5 years away from retirement, it's very crucial to have different asset classes and some fixed income to cushion those downturns, because you can't afford to make a mistake and you can't let greed take over and have all of your money just in one part of the market. Having all of your money just in large caps is like playing baseball with just a pitcher and a catcher on the field. When the ball's hit, we don't know where the ball is going to go. We need to have someone on the shortstop. We need to have a first baseman. We need to have a third baseman and a second baseman and people in the outfield. In any given year, we don't know where the ball is going to be hit. And when you look back in time, the best performing asset class shifts from year to year. Very rarely is it large cap every single year. Sector rotation and asset class rotation tends to happen in different economic environments. So you want to make sure you cover all your bases. When you look at asset class performance from 2010 to 2024, so roughly 14 years, large caps were the best asset class only four of the years out of those 14 years. Real estate investment trusts were actually the best asset class 6 times. Small caps were the best asset class 4 times. And emerging markets were the best asset class only once, but they had 4 times where they were in the top 3. So you never know what asset class is going to be the best performer. The key is not chasing performance. If you look at the last 2 years, 2023 and 2024, large caps were the best performing asset class. So will that continue into 2025 and 2026? Very rarely does an asset class have more than 2 back-to-back years of being the best asset class to have money in. True diversification isn't just about trying to maximize your returns. It's about maximizing the probability of achieving your financial goals while minimizing unnecessary risks. Your goal shouldn't be to beat the S&P 500 every year. That is not your benchmark. The S&P 500 is not the market. Your goal should be to build a portfolio that can weather different types of economic storms while capturing most of the upside. It's about protecting your wealth as well as continuing to build it to help you reach your most important goals. If you're wondering whether your portfolio has hidden concentration risks like we discussed today or overlap, I'd like to invite you to schedule a complimentary portfolio review with me. Normally, I charge about $1,500 to do a portfolio analysis that also includes recommendations on how to improve your portfolio. So for the next 2 weeks, send me an email at brian@momentuswealthadvisors.com and include in the subject title, complimentary portfolio review. And send me a list of the ticker symbols of the different investments you own. And you don't have to put in the dollar amounts, to send me the percentages you have in those particular investments. Then what I'll do is send you a portfolio analysis that'll show any of the hidden risks in your portfolio, how much you have in value versus growth, how much exposure you have in small caps and mid-sized companies, as well as large caps, and your international and emerging market exposure. It'll also have your sector weightings, how much exposure you have to the different sectors, and maybe highlight any areas you might be overexposed to. This complimentary portfolio analysis is only available for 2 weeks after this episode airs. So get in touch with me at brian@momentouswealthadvisors.com and find out if your portfolio is truly diversified. Just remember, understanding your true diversification today prevents some unwanted surprises tomorrow. So that's it for today's episode. Is your portfolio truly diversified? And if you like this episode, please rate the episode, make some comments, and hit the notification bell to get updated on future Wealth Decision podcasts. And please, if you could, share it with a family member or a friend. My goal with the Wealth Decisions podcast is to reach over 100,000 people by the end of the year in the Twin Cities and beyond, so that people can make better wealth decisions to live a richer life. If you'd like to schedule a discovery call with me, you can go to my website at momentouswealthadvisors.com, and I'll spend some time to get to know you a little bit and find out if I might be able to steer you in the right direction or help you with your financial future. Once again, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.